Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. I'll be joined by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, here shortly. Very excited for tonight's show. We're going to have an action-packed slobber knocker of a show. Got a bunch of esteemed guests that are going to be joining us. I'll jump into that here in just a second, but without any much further ado, let me jump into this week's trendline report from DAT. We are showing that the national price of diesel fuel has went up by 0.7 percentage points, we're showing a national average for diesel fuel at $2.74 per gallon nationwide on average. After falling for most of January and then stabilizing at the start of February, spot rates have moved up last week as shippers look to move as much freight as possible out of the way of the winter storm that is hitting around the country. And I tell you, I've seen some horrendous videos from Dallas and all the different parts, and hopefully everybody's out there being safe. If that stuff is too slick out there, ladies and gentlemen, look, there's no freight that's too hot that won't cool off in the ditch. So take your time, be careful, be safe out there, and just pattern yourselves accordingly. Let's take a look and see how these rates were performing across the different segment types over the previous weeks. And then we'll jump into and introduce our guest for this evening. So for dry vans, over the previous week, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, we are showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.10 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate of $2.18 for dry vans. Moving up to the Midwest, we're showing an average outbound rate at $2.60 per mile. Dropping down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing average rates at $2.11 per mile on average on the outbound side. And spot market outbound average rates coming out of the west coast for dry vans is at $2.27 per mile. Changing gears and jumping over to the skateboard or flatbed portion of the report, we are showing that the outbound spot market average rate out of the Northeast is at $2.41 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing an average outbound spot market rate at $2.59 per mile. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.91. Moving down to the south central region, we're showing outbound spot market rates averaging $2.29. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.13. And for the segment that is near and dear to my heart, the temperature-controlled or reefer portion of the report, we're showing outbound spot market average rates out of the Northeast at $2.29. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we're showing average outbound spot market rates at $2.25. Coming out of the Midwest, leading all segment types, the Midwest is the leader across all three segment types, showing average outbound spot market rates at $2.98. Moving down to the south central region of the United States, we're showing outbound rates at $2.53. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing outbound spot market rates for reefers at $2.52. And with that being said, let me go and grab my co-hosts first of all. Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Luckily, down here in the sunny southeastern portion of the United States, it's not necessarily all that warm, but at least we're not dealing with any of that wet, white stuff that most of the country's kind of been dealing with right now.
Yeah, my God. It's just awful out there. And, you know, you brought up at the beginning of the show some of the just some of the catastrophes that have happened. That one on I-35 in Fort Worth last Thursday, the carnage is just unreal, and that's going to have huge impact. We have insurance people on the show, and Dave Owens coming on, and we have Hank Seaton, and I'm sure they'll attest to the fact that there's going to probably be some nuclear settlement somewhere over this. It's not good, and certainly the lives lost and people injured and property lost, what a nightmare. I wish winter would go away already.
Yeah, that's some really horrendous footage that I've seen coming out of Dallas and the Fort Worth area on that little deal that they had with that big major pileup that they had. But yeah, but without any further ado, I'm excited for tonight's show. We've got some Titans on board with us tonight, and I definitely appreciate these gentlemen. I mean, especially with Hank. I mean, we get Hank back to back. I mean, so nice we have him twice, and it's
I know.
So definitely appreciate.
I can't afford to
definitely
buy that much
appreciate
time at work.
Man, I tell you, we are so fortunate here to be so blessed. But with that being said,
certainly
let's welcome
are.
Our good friend Hank first. We're gonna welcome Hank in first, and we're gonna add everybody else here in shortly. Hank, good evening. How you doing up there?
It's hard here. We've got an ice storm. Internet's been down for 3 days, and when I call AT&T, I talk to a machine. And when I finally got to a human being, she was very nice. She called me Sir Henry, but she was in Manila, as in the Philippines. And when I had to set my new password, she says, "Well, like, you know, give me a movie star or a singer." And I said, "Dolly Parton." And she said, "Who's that?" So you know, if we talk about those good American jobs, I think they've all gone to Manila.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Well, with that being said, we're gonna shift gears real quick, and we're gonna bring your good friend, your tag team dancer partner on. Hank, let's welcome in Tommy Roop this evening. Good evening, Tommy. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm doing well. When you said Hank was nice the other day, was that because he came back or he said something nice? This is new. It was nice he said something today already. I was just wondering what context that was.
Lord.
Because
for
I was
five
wondering
minutes
if it was that he was nice. If he was nice on the show, I'd like to have a recording of that part. Hey, Hank, how you doing?
We don't waste no time.
Like
we're coming it. With it right now.
Oh, boy.
No time.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're suffering like that, as the rest of the country is. This is a tragedy. One thing you said on your show, this cost of fuel is going to go up because of all this bad. It's already going up. I saw about 20 cents a gallon just from yesterday to today.
Right. Now, that's short-lived,
yeah,
I would think. David Owen is on the line, and he's probably – I would think he's responsible for being probably the third, somewhere around the third largest purchaser of fuel in the United States. Let's bring him on. Let's get his take on this one. This is a hot subject.
Hey, Chuck.
Absolutely.
Rico.
Welcome in, David. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. And Hank, it's good to talk to you. And Tommy, good hearing your voice. Just quickly about fuel, if you want me to start with that.
Yeah, I do.
The one of the great events since deregulation occurred sometime around 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in there, that saved most small trucking companies and kept them in business, and it's called a fuel surcharge.
Right.
And they invented that piece of equipment and that thing, which allows companies during an upward trend or an upward movement with fuel to stay in business and control the cost of fuel somewhat. Without that, we would have gone out of business during the Depression between 2007 and 2010. So it's really not so much the price of fuel. It's the, that's the thing that I fear the most for our small carriers, particularly, and owner operators, it's the scarcity of fuel. And it doesn't make any difference if fuel is $5 or $6 a gallon. We got to buy it, and we got to use it. We got to burn it. So when you start building up artificial ways to offer up scarcity, like stopping the pipeline, for instance, which I think is an absurd move. You get into the position of creating a crisis because of scarcity and lack of product or lack of foot in the ground. Every time we have a catastrophe like this big front that set records all the way down into Houston and Galveston and down there where it's not supposed to do this, freight stops, and it doesn't take long for the guys that are hauling fuel not to be able to get it spread out into the, you know, put in the ground and for our guys to use. Fortunately, I guess fortunately, at the same time, there are not many trucks running out there right now today, I don't believe. I can't get out of my driveway, but, of course, I'm not used to this stuff anyhow.
Yeah, you and Hank are both in the Nashville area. Now, my understanding is that there's some refineries down, some major refineries in the Texas area, Houston, I guess, or south of there, that are closed because they don't have any power.
Absolutely.
Because of the storms.
And I thought it was fairly ironic. I was catching the news this morning, and I saw where the people of Houston out there, where a lot of those refineries are within several hundred miles of Houston down there, and I saw where a lot of people in Houston, because of the lack of power, were sitting in their cars and running fossil fuel to stay warm.
I'm not trying
to make light of that situation by any means, but that's a pretty good wake-up call for trying to put all your eggs in one basket. I think that's what's happened with our country, is we're relying so much on high tech and we're relying so much on alternative forms of fuel, we forget that petroleum and fuel oil products go into about 500 different products, and not only do they fuel our trucks and cars and help us move, they provide heat for the people up in the Northeast, which can't get heat in oil if the pipeline, if Colonial Pipeline stops flowing. They won't be able to keep warm. They'll be getting in their electric cars and trying to stay warm.
You're right. And how does the electric car charge? How does it get charged?
They better have a big
battery. Yeah, but how does that battery get charged?
I don't know. You got it. With electricity, probably.
And where do we get the let's bring it right down.
The energy's just blowing in the wind?
Do what, Hank?
Yeah.
The energy's just blowing in the wind. We just
absolutely.
Yeah.
We can hook a big windmill behind those trucks.
Yeah.
Well, my understanding, now I could be wrong, and somebody shoot me down if I'm wrong, but a lot of the windmills in Texas, I heard, were frozen up because of the ice storm. So they were not functioning.
You know, those windmills kill birds, and that's gonna be the end of them.
Well, it's just. I think we could all agree that we need to try to develop every piece of alternative energy that we can, but don't get all hyped up to where we're going to have no fossil fuel to get it. Here in the Tennessee Valley, Hank, if I'm not wrong, most of the electricity within several hundred miles of where we are today come from coal-burning TVA stations. Is that right?
I think they're trying to cut them out, but, you know, that was all part of the whole TVA original things. We know where they are up and down the highway. They tried to go, atomic with a couple of reactors, and that was too perilous. But, you know, I think the sad part about that is we didn't finish that pipeline. So there goes North American energy independence. So our Canadians are going to send it on over to Vancouver, and it can go to China, and they'll burn it and blow it back over our way.
So I'm not sure there's going to be any net gain. Chuck, the other thing about the about you mentioned refineries, the EPA has seen to it that we have. I don't know that we've built a new refinery in the last 55 years in the United States because the EPA has made it almost non-profitable.
Yep. Yeah, I think it was in the 70s when Jimmy Carter was in power, and he put a moratorium, I believe, against refineries back then. So that's got to be the mid-70s or something, late 70s. So you're almost right on. And you know what? And I am all for clean air. Don't get me wrong, guys. But we can't just go from one totally to the other. We have to have reserves, just like a business, just like insurance. Insurance companies have reserves. We need reserves. You know, we have to stockpile energy just in case things like this happen. We should have green energy. I think it's great. And, you know, if electric trucks will do the job of diesel-operated trucks, then let's look at it. You know, sometimes I feel like Tommy Rook's dad must have felt during the 50s when he converted his fleet from gasoline to diesel at some point. People must have thought he was pretty daring. when we talk about getting electric trucks, I'm not there yet because I am not an early adapter when it comes to this stuff because I think it's way too risky. But, you know, there are people betting the farm on it. I'm just not one of them. At my age, I don't want to bet the farm. Because you can't, if you lose it, you can't get it back. I do want to talk about something tonight regarding insurance, gentlemen, and I have some concerns.
I thought this was a political show, so I was just waiting back. Go ahead. But you mentioned my father, so I'm up again. But let me tell you, the real conversion, Chuck, was from a Thermo King, from ice to a Thermo King. That was the first conversion.
Okay.
for a reefer.
Do you remember that, Tom?
Oh, yeah. That was the famous thing because I had a carte blanche. I could get all the ice I wanted. My next-door neighbor had the 7-Up plant, so we were always invited to the party. He bought the drinks, and I bought the ice.
He wasn't old enough to drive his bagger home.
Hey, Chuck, the reason they call it a dry van is because no water's coming out of them. That old bucket and blower water came back in your refrigerator. This is where the term dry van came from.
I didn't know that. See, we're learning something tonight.
Yeah, that's just because I'm old, but go ahead. I had a good memory. But ask me the insurance stuff. Tell me what Hank said wrong that I got to correct him last week.
No, Hank didn't say anything wrong. Hank brought some news. Well, here they go. we should just let them go, Rico. last week, Hank brought us some information, which, talking to David earlier this week, he substantiated it, that there are more new entrants now for new licensing as operators in the United States than ever before. This is a new phenomena this year. People are trying to cash in. My question is, I know how impossible and expensive it is for new entrants to get insurance. And these people must, for a brand new entrant, even if that is an operator that has been with Landstar for 20 years with a perfect driving record, because he's a new entrant, he is going to pay somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 for insurance for his first year. How the heck are these new entrants, how are they affording $25,000 to $30,000 a year for insurance? That's my question. And what sort of insurance are they buying? And what are they not getting?
ahead, let's talk about that first. This is that report. A good friend of Hank and mine, Avery Vance, right, Hank? That's what you were quoting, right? Avery's report that came out.
Yeah,
that was public.
Avery's one that I rely on. But, Tommy, the other thing is in January and February, at the current burn rate, there will be over 160,000 new carriers this year. Now, I don't know January and February will say that, but that's a 25% growth. I think it's attributable to people fleeing the independent contractor model for power only. But I think that what you're saying, Chuck, is right on. You know, I think David, what do you see as the turnover rate?
Hold on.
50% are gone in 3 years?
It's hard to put a finger on that, Hank. We only measure the ones that give us an opportunity to get to know them by coming through our NEST class. And I can tell you this, that the ones that become NASTIC members with one or two trucks before they start growing and making mistakes are succeeding at a pretty rapid rate. However, you're right. It's criminal almost, Tommy, the kind of insurance that they have to play. And before I'm going to let you talk here in a second, but I want to point out something. Rico was talking about at the beginning of the program about the big crash down in Fort Worth, and it was horrible. And it was about I think 9 fatalities now, 7 or 8 or 9. It was crazy horrible.
Right. Growing every day.
And unfortunately, one of the big causes for that one being so bad was the way the construction barricades were put in there. They were almost funneled into a gauntlet and had nowhere to go. So when those vehicles, cars and trucks, came over the hill, they couldn't hit the shoulder. The one FedEx truck that it was a spectacular.
He was airborne, yeah.
Yeah, got airborne. I think he tried to run. I thought I saw him running into the barricade to try to slow down, and didn't do a damn bit of good. Now, I'm going to point out something that I've pointed out probably 20 times in the last 25 years. And abundantly pointed out to with CSA and FMCSA over the last 10 years that in that crash, regardless of who's at fault, and obviously black ice had more to do with it than anything else, and then the state not having the proper warning devices up there to let people know that there was a problem ahead. When it started, the response was horrible. But it wasn't trucking's fault. It was not. They didn't start that accident.
Black ice
started it. But every big truck, every 18-wheel truck that's in that accident, there's over 100 vehicles. So my guess would be probably 12 to 20 18-wheelers were in that debacle. Every single one of them will get a 9, 8, 7, 8, 9 vitality black eye on their CSA score. Every one of them, and that creates a field day for the billboard ambulance chasers that have run the cost of insurance and run nuclear verdicts off the chart the last 10 years. So anyhow, I just wanted to point that out, and I'm sorry to take some of your time, Tommy. Tell me what you were going to say about insurance.
Well, two things. I was just reinforcing. We ran a report last week for a program I'm doing about people with MC numbers. When I focus on them, I try to look at people with MC numbers because that's the core of our membership is for-hire interstate truckers. I know they're exempt on that part, but to get rid of everybody with a DOT number, all the private carriers. And there were 269,000 people with MC numbers, which is the highest number that I have ever seen. And we also ran who's writing. Who's writing most of this stuff? David is the one that you all have. Progressive is the marketplace of all this. They're by far and away. They write in about a dozen different insurance companies that they own, but the Progressive Group is what's riding most of this, most of these new ventures. And Chuck, they're not going. When you configure physical damage in cargo, auto liability, you might push 20 to 22,000, depending on where you are. The Midwest is much less costly than the coast. I mean, the closer you get to water, the more expensive insurance is for some reason, meaning the coastlines. That part of it, and I think the problem that I think you hit on the head, I think a lot of the people, because of the independent contractor, this model's been around a long time. It's a carrier's model where the motor carrier turns into a non-access logistics company, meaning a broker, change their contracts with their shippers and agree to broker loads and then set the owner-operators up with their own DOT number, OMC number, and their own insurance. And they have then put some kind of program together like that will guarantee them some income and to the owner-operators. The same owner-operators they did have, but they set it up that way. And I think that had something to do with these new ventures as the DOT reporting, as you said, Chuck. There might be people who are working connected with the motor carrier, but because of the independent contractors fear of the California potential and other places, some people are moving that way. The other thing is there was a lot of revenue that if you got your authority there, if you were hauling the right thing, meat, some of this other stuff that would be very tempting to some of these people, particularly if they were hauling for someone else, because animal hauling is there they exceed the speed. I mean, they exceed the hours of service. That's the crazy part about that, is that they don't have to start even counting their hours of service until they're 150 miles away from where they picked it up or within 150 miles to drop it. I mean, they can go 300 miles in a trip without being on the log,
yeah,
which is
that is a big loophole in the hours of service.
Well, it's not a loophole. It was an exemption that the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration came up with. I guess the PETA people wanted to protect all these animals that were headed to the slaughterhouse and make sure they got there healthy. Actually, what was driving it, they wanted to make sure they got there without losing any weight and costing the daggum meat market revenue. But they came up with an idea that they said that it wouldn't do, that it, they based on their whatever they did, a study of some kind, or it was a, I think it was a bunch of experts sitting around saying, well, we just don't think it's going to impact safety numbers very much, so we'll just let these guys run as they will, because it's almost impossible to stop a truckload of cows without killing the cows or creating more problems than it's worth. And actually, you don't have a lot when you get to market.
Yeah, but before you got into the livestock thing for years, and it's because of the farmers' political clout, they could run all over California making multiple pickups and not start logging until they made the last pickup. So it applies to pickles and a whole bunch of other things too, in terms of an exemption from the hours of service requirements, and that's why a farm boy can drive for about 14 straight hours or whatever it is. It's one of those nuances on the hours of service, it's interesting. We're talking about the power only option, and I'm doing a little presentation on that next week, because I think it's you look at the cost, and it really, the whole power only makes some real sense if you cut out the pay to wait and you have a trailer sitting around for a day rather than a driver. That makes sense. A lot about it makes sense, but you try to take an owner operator, make him into a compliant motor carrier, and tell him, oh, well, you're now going to have to pick up insurance at, I think, 15 or 20K, and somehow that gets built into your cost structure. And then you're going to have to put up with these broker contracts that are risk transfer devices. And add to that, you're going to have to fight with insurance companies to get insurance coverage that meets the needs for cargo liability from the shippers. And, you know, trying to do all of that and be a little guy, the shippers say, hey, it's the survival of the fittest, and the little guy is the one that gets the most abuse. I know Dave will say, well, gee, that's the economy. You can't change it. But at the same time, I think everybody on this call has got a real heart for the little guys and wants to see some way that they at least get a fair shake. And, you know, these adhesion contracts. And let's face it, an insurance contract for cargo is an adhesion contract. The carrier can't read it or understand it. And the same's true with the cram-down contracts that the brokers and shippers put on the spot market. So it's going to be tough to educate those 269,000 carriers in terms
right.
of what
and
to look
start,
for.
100%, Hank, and we've got to start here and now. And I think what we have three experts on the show here. And what I'd like to do is just in simple terms, advise our listeners what they need to look out for when they're buying insurance. These people know what to look out for when they're buying trucks and fuel, but insurance is such a huge cost. And I think that quite often you gentlemen can agree or disagree with me. I think my experience has been anyways, you have carriers out there that are buying policies that aren't giving them ample coverage in certain areas. And now those are
go ahead. Let me defend that to one extent, Chuck.
Go ahead,
okay,
please.
And we don't
I want you to.
Auto liability is uniform in most situations. In fact, the BINPD and auto liability, as long as it's caused by a truck that's covered and a driver that's covered, responds the same. So there's no real difference in auto liability coverages. Physical damage, the biggest difference in physical damage is what your truck worth and how the towing bill is going to be paid. Other
right.
than that, physical damage is pretty well straightforward. And that's a big deal because some carriers don't pay the towing bill and if the limits run out. Some carriers pay towing bills above the limit that's chosen in the stated limit policy. The big difference is cargo. And unfortunately, I agree with Hank about the cargo forms being all over the board. There are some good ones and bad ones. The problem is a motor carrier goes to an agent, and the agent does not understand their business, meaning motor carrier business at all. This is why the foundation and our agents are trained to do this, and we preach this in cargo and the other lines of coverage we have. And, Hank, I think you know that, and, David, you're learning that's what we do from a standpoint of our foundation. But the point is they get the cheapest policy they want, and what they end up buying is a certificate, and it won't pay anything. And so,
right.
And then you're right, they don't read it, and a lot of times they don't even have a copy of the policy once they pay for it. And unfortunately, a lot of times the agent hasn't read it. So the big damage is in cargo, and they've got to deal with an agent, and they've got to tell the agent simply, I am hauling these commodities in these locations in this quantity. I have to have coverage for these commodities. And start with that. Without that, you don't know what the exclusions are. And then be leery if you're hauling cargo that has some problems, like perishables. We talk about food. That's, besides the Food Modernization Act, there are other ramifications in it. If you're hauling anything of high value, because, again, like copper, special metals, those kind of things,
right.
those are the danger areas. But they have a tendency to buy just something to give to the shipper, and the shipper, in a lot of cases, do not police that. And then all of a sudden, as Hank points out, you have a loss, and you're in between the middle part of it. I mean, I read a general liability policy written to a broker that excludes all auto exposures and makes everybody there an independent contractor, an employee. So what's the policy worth? Those are the dangers, but they just buy it to have a. Let me finish, Hank, and then please you can step in. They just let it buy to have something on the wall, and that they can't afford to do that. So the cargo coverage is the place that they have the biggest exposure, because that will put them out of business from a shipper standpoint, because the shipper will try to get paid and then they won't get loads anymore. The auto liability cases, aren't going to put them out of business.
Yeah, there are two issues. Increasingly, the shippers are asking for more than the law requires, particularly reject it, crush it, and dump it, waiving mitigation and salvage. And no insurance company with standard reasonable rates is going to accept paying a reject it, crush it, and dump it load. So on that end, you really have to watch the contract you sign with the shipper, and some of the brokers are just notoriously bad and they won't change a word. But then from the cargo policy point of view, and I think Tommy would agree with this, if it were products liability, it couldn't be sold because there'd be a disclaimer on it that you'd have to very clearly state what are the exclusions. There's a thing called an accord certificate of insurance that only an underwriter and an agent could like, because it says, this just says that there's a policy issue. It doesn't disclose whether there's coverage. That's all that a shipper can ask for. That's all that he can get. That doesn't put the agent out on the limb for anything. I believe that every small carrier, when they go to shop cargo, should say, Mr. Agent, I'm relying on your expertise. I want you to tell me if any of the following restrictions limit coverage. Anything that takes away coverage for theft of cargo, wetness, dampness, and moisture. Just run through it. I can give you a tick list of the 20 most egregious points. And then if the agent ponies that up, it's on the carrier to make a choice. Well, look, I'm not a reefer carrier and I'm not a flatbed carrier, so maybe I can live with wetness, dampness, and moisture. But I can't tell you how many flatbed guys have been sold policies that don't cover damage to wet steel, or how many people get what's called everybody thinks, well, boy, you're in great shape now that you've got reefer breakdown. Well, reefer breakdown is less than 20% of the foodstuff ships I see. It's really an education problem, and we've got to do a better job educating the little guys who are buying that coverage to know what to ask for experienced agent on the hook.
Hank, I don't disagree at all with that, but this is why I'm emphasizing from the agent standpoint, and any agent who's in front of me knows we preach exactly the opposite of to do exactly what you said, to explain it, to find out, and to have the and find out what an insurer is hauling and who their customers are, and pay attention there and sell the cargo policy that works for them, and explain these kind of things. And I mean, we're talking about, you know, my every outline I write for cargo says be careful of a situation where the shipper controls the salvage, because all of a sudden you got a total loss. And it might not be paid because some of that stuff doesn't have direct cover, direct damage to it. I mean, we talk about that. How to get it down to the individual audience that might be listening to us tonight, the only choice is to do business with an agent. And Hank, exactly what you said. I have it a little opposite here, because I don't think that I would rather them say, here's what I haul for. Tell me I won't cover it for these things. And spell it out that way, because that then still puts the same burden on the agent, but it comes from what the motor carrier is doing, and that's the important part.
You know what,
though?
Here's what the issue is, gentlemen. This is the bear trap. You have you've got all these new entrants getting in there, getting their authority, and they're going to get out on the road. They're going to take a load from. They're going to take a load from New Jersey and end up in Gallup, New Mexico. And they're going to find a load from Gallup, New Mexico, going back to towards New Jersey, going to Scranton, Pennsylvania. And when they get that load from a load broker,
quite often, because I have seen this when, because remember, we run two businesses. We run a motor carriage and we run a brokerage. And when I worked a lot of hours in the motor carriage division, I would see this now and then from smaller brokers where it would say, quantity description that we were picking up for a broker. It would say FAK. You wouldn't even know what that is. And if you didn't question, am I picking up a load of copper? Am I picking up a load? We even had it once. One of the dispatchers sent a truck on a bill of lading, or not a bill of lading, on instructions, pick up a load at such and such warehouse, FAK. We didn't take the load because it was hazardous and we weren't hauling it. But, you know, these are the sorts of things that some uneducated brokers will pull on carriers. So our new entrants, we need to teach them so that they become good carriers and they're successful. You know, I don't think anybody wants to see failure.
They've got to know what they're hauling, but lots of times that's not when they fill out the application for insurance. I've got a case going now for a broker that had five loads of copper stolen, and they all ended up on two truck Charlies, and two truck Charlies didn't know what the copper was worth, and some thief re-diverted it. So now they're all sitting here with $150,000 cargo claim because they didn't know what they hauled. But guess what's in half their policies and exclusion for precious metals?
For copper, right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this guy is a dry van hauler, okay? So, you know, when you fill out your MCS 150, you don't necessarily put down there that paper towels is all you're going to haul in that flat, in that van. So, you know, that's why if you're going to have, and most of them have commodity exclusions, you need to damn well know what that is and be sure you don't pick it up.
Exactly. Exactly. And you're just,
well,
you know what, if you're a small, go ahead.
No, Chuck. I mean, I agree with you that part of it. And I don't know how you can overcome what you're saying, because we're dealing with human nature, and it's tough to deal with human nature. Because they'll haul a load, they need it to make the payment. And sometimes, hearing Rico's rates charts, the rates seem pretty good here, but we both know they'll take a load that will lose money just so they got enough money to pay for their groceries when they get home, even though it might cost them more in fuel and they can put on the credit card in that way. And I don't disagree that the insurance carrier needs to say these commodities are not covered.
100%.
And that needs to be a part of the policy part. But it's just, they cannot just buy it for a certificate. And they've got to be willing. I mean, the cheapest policies are cheap for a reason. And that's the thing they can't factor in, because any product in cargo can be covered as long as the underwriter knows what it is and the insured is willing to do what it takes to make sure that they control the exposures from theft detection to refrigeration to that product.
I agree with what you're saying, but there's another way to skin this this issue. You know, when a guy just says, "Oh, gee, I'm so desperate to get home from Keokuk, I'll take anything that's on the board for any broker, reject it, crush it, and dump it. I don't care. I just need to get home." Well, that's not the kind of guy who can assume those kinds of risks and get away with it. You know what? What happens in the niches, and Tommy, you know this, the LTL carriers price their cargo, their rates, based upon the value of the cargo, the density and the storability. Right. In the air freight industry, it's 50 cents a pound. People could initially say, all right, look, it's a load of strawberries or it's a load of beans. You know, I can take a rejected, crush it, and dump it on a load of beans that's worth $5,000, but I can't take it if it's shrimp. I mean, you know, some of those things all goes into the calculus of your lowest rate has to be the cheapest commodity, Carmack, with the lowest release rate. I mean, you know, I think a small carrier should start off saying, look, The most I'm going to haul a load for is a maximum of $100,000, if that's how much cargo insurance I have. To sign these damn contracts that never mentions the limit set you up for, I got one now that we thought it was a Quonset hut. It turned out to be a reconnaissance forward station, and it's a $280,000 claim. And the client that handled it didn't even know what was in the corrugated box. So I mean, you know, you got to start off with what your cheapest rate is, and it has to have a release rate.
Can I ask a question? Can I ask a question?
Go ahead, David. Sure.
You two guys, Hank and Tommy. I deal with small carriers. We have an insurance agency. We write people. We put people on our risk management program, and I have data that supports the fact that they very rarely have a claim. I have carriers that have written insurance with us for 5, 6, 7 years and never had a claim of any kind on any line. And so my question to you two guys, you're talking about the responsibility of the agency and the responsibility of the paper of the trucking company and responsibility of one guy that's getting into the industry to know whether what's covered and what's not when nobody discloses that on the front end. What percentage of times do you have a movement and have a cargo claim? About one out of every 50,000?
No, more often than that, I would
think.
Well, I'm just asking a question.
Okay, I'll tell you. In terms of acute and chronic, chronic is how many do you have? I think anybody who is hauling foodstuff is going to have a $15,000 to $20,000 claim this year. I think it's that chronic. I think rejected.
How many?
Well,
no,
dump
it are you
is,
talking about one truck?
No, I'm saying an average five, six truck guy.
How many movements, Hank? How many times does a guy put a load on and deliver it somewhere? How many times is he going to have a cargo claim? One in 5,000, one in 10,000?
No, I would think a
I don't
lot
know.
More
I don't know that anybody's got that, you know. But I fortunately, I guess for me, but I see your members who and other small carriers who get. That sorry, Charlie, you don't have any coverage. It is a spiral of death, particularly to a little guy. It may be like how many people catch COVID. Well, not that many are actually die from it, so that doesn't give me any sense. Any goodwill.
I think that's a horrible analogy, by the way.
That's
a horrible analogy
for a little guy. For a little guy who factors his receivables. What happens when he gets a $20,000 offset from certain brokers? That's taken out of his swift, out of his liquidity. His factor closes him down. He's out of business. And you know, I think what would be an interesting study is to take all of those newbies 3 years later and find out how many of them will run out of business because of an uninsured cargo claim. I don't have those numbers. But I do know
Hank,
this.
I know that it's
a risk.
I disagree with you to the cent, and I agree with David on this. I don't think there are that many per person that's paying attention. One of the problems, as you know, in cargo is the CARMAC, which makes them absolutely liable. So in that case, even the Houston situation we have, where the driver did absolutely nothing wrong, he might have been or she might have been stopped there and run into it. The cargo carriers will have to pay for that cargo because of CARMAC, and there won't be anybody to subrogate back against. That's a factor involved in cargo that's not involved in other lines of insurance that you would have from a liability standpoint. But I think you get the anomaly because people come to you when they have problems. I agree with Hank. They're not. I mean, Dave. They're not that many per thing. But I totally agree with you in two ways. First off, it will put them out of business or at least interrupt their relationship with their shipper. and won't get loads anymore. And if the shipper then exercises their rights to withdraw, to withhold payments of other loads and or attempt to collect from them, it's going to put them out of business. Totally agree with that. The second part, though, is I don't think we can excuse them for not taking care of their business. Chuck, you know, doing business with my father. One of the reasons people did business with my father, he was fair. And he took care of people and made sure he did not put his owner operators or his independent contractor in this case, because there were people hauling produce that wasn't owner operators.
Right.
He made sure that they had the right what they needed to survive. And when you, this is, you know, a whole different subject, but they used to have the blue book. You do business with brokers who you can partner with, he negotiated rates with Vlasic to make sure that there was enough dollars there to keep his truckers loaded and keep them in business. And so it's who your business partners are, no matter who you're dealing with. It can be your insurance agent, it can be your broker, it can be your shipper. And it's a partnership, and a lot of time,
100%.
Yeah, it's a lot of times that partnership, they're independent of each other, they take the lowest common denominator. The other thing, Chuck, that you bring part of the revenue, I agree with this too. In fact, when I was talking to Brent, we're going to do some talk about the pay drivers are getting. Well, a lot of the pay the driver gets depends on what the value of the load is, because you can't afford to haul sod and mulch far because it's too cheap, part of it. And so people who are hauling the high value loads are the ones who are exposing themselves to the potential of having the higher cargo claim. So there is a relationship in those things. And I think, and I know that David's got an entry course. So you know, David, to help the owner operators get started beyond just loss prevention. And this is kind of stuff anybody wants to get started needs to hear this. Your friend on the radio, job too. Kevin doesn't pay any attention to insurance and some things he says that doesn't work, but he preaches that part. You got to be a solid business person before you get involved in this business. And I couldn't agree with you more.
And even if you are a solid business person, there are so many variables that you can't control, regardless of whether you got the best transportation lawyer in the world, Henry Seaton, or the best insurance agency in the world, Tommy Rock. You know, it's a very, very, very difficult and dangerous and risk-filled business. And all you can do is try to cover all your bases on the beginning, not grow too fast, and get really, really good people to drive your trucks. I do feel like that the insurance community, one of the big reason why people is paying so much for insurance as a new entrant or as a startup company or even a small company, on a single one truck guy with his own authority and owner operator, not leased on. The reason why they pay so much is there aren't any markets that the insurance communities kind of turn their back on that particular model. And I don't know. I asked a question a while ago. I didn't get a very good answer. The insurance community should know answers to those kinds of questions before they rate a guy with 20 trucks better than a guy with two, in my opinion. Because the more trucks you have, the more drivers you have, the lower your standards for drivers becomes, and the more likelihood you're going to have a double-digit, triple-digit, 100% driver turnover and be putting an inexperienced driver behind the wheel, which causes accidents. Now, I know that increases the risk and should increase the 100%. Insurance.
Well, typically yes. Said, in fact,
well, the thing that I was worried about tonight before we got started, and unfortunately it's come to fruition, is we just wasn't going to have enough time to really get all the way through this thing. But I was just blown right by it.
Give me one more minute, David. One of the cornerstones of underwriting is driver retention. There, every other runner I know runs a number to find out how many of their drivers have been there over a year. And if they have not had a sufficient number, now the number's only, they're only looking for 50 or 60% being there over a year. But that is an underwriting factor. And what we're concerned about, we're going to, at the conference, we're going to do a whole day, I mean 4 hours of this, is the driver. Are now, because of the driver shortage, are we going to substitute quantity for quality? And that we're really concerned about. And I'm doing some webinars and all, trying to alert the insurance company that way, in the insurance industry, for doing this stuff. But that is a real problem, and I agree with you. But it still gets back down to how good the driver is and how good the motor carrier is selecting the driver, and are they willing to pay are they willing to pay and have the good driver behind the wheel? And they are paying less. The other thing is, now there are a few companies coming. If you adopt all this, a lot of this technology, that can also affect your rate favorably.
I definitely appreciate all of the insight that we've definitely gained tonight. I guess I'm gonna have to try to put a bow on this thing while we have a few minutes left. But it all does is just leads into we'll just have to have all you guys back again for another show.
Definitely.
But so I want everyone to know, for all things Hank Seaton, you can go check him out over at the website, www.transportationlaw.net. That's www.transportationlaw.net. Tons of information over there, articles, previous webinars and things that he's done. You can order the book, Rules of the Road, over there. If you don't have that book on your shelf, you are absolutely doing yourself a disservice. I personally think, and Hank has not asked me to do this. Hank does not, you know, but it's just something that I believe in. You need to have, if you're going to be in business, if you're going to be in this business as a small guy, you don't have a big legal team, and you need to understand the things that you're getting yourself into. And Hank's book is an excellent, gives an excellent outline of all of the major things that could be a bugaboo for you, and you need to have that on your shelf. You need to have probably two copies. You need to have, if you're still in the truck driving, you need to have one in the truck, and you probably need to have one on your shelf at the office. That way you don't even have to worry about moving one from the other, but you need to have, you know, I think at least two of them sitting around. And with that being said, I definitely think that you guys, and David has not asked me to say this, if you're not involved with NASDAQ, you're doing yourself a disservice. If nothing else, if you're just getting involved and just for the fuel discount. The fuel discount alone will pay for your membership in the first month. I promise you. So if you're a small guy and you're still paying retail, you need to get involved with NASDAQ. Go give them guys a call. David, my guy up at NASDAQ is Bobby. You can ask for Bobby. Tell him I sent you. But David, anything else you want to tell the folks how they can get in contact with you?
Absolutely, Rico. And thanks again to you and Chuck for having me on, and Hank and Tommy as well. Yes, as a matter of fact, in our company, you can call and ask for me and you'll get me. So just dial the 800 number. It's 800-264-8580, or go to our website. It's, NASDAQ.com. Love talking to you guys, and I've enjoyed the discourse here. And like I say, I always learn something from these kind of things, and look forward to the next round.
Now, I do have to say something here that's really interesting. Just one sec, Rico. Our three guests have something in common. They all went to school in North Carolina, about 70 miles away from each other.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're almost old enough to claim that we invented the research triangle, but I ain't going there.
Well, I want to give Tommy an opportunity to let the people know how to get in contact with him as well. Tommy, the floor is yours.
Real quick. MCIF, Motor Carriers Insurance Education Foundation, MCIF.org. And the only difference between me and the rest of them, We don't charge anything. We'll give the motor carriers any information they want, referrals. We have nothing to sell. All our objective is to provide information so they're a better buyer of insurance. If they want referrals to agencies, we'll do that. If they don't, they don't. I mean, I was on the phone this week to an agent to help him update his 150 for him because he was out of, he didn't get a load because of that. I spent 30 minutes to show him how to do that. But we will answer questions, and we're there just for information only. And I think we're probably the number one source of information in trucking insurance. And I think most of y'all agree with that part of it.
100%.
Good deal. We definitely appreciate it. Chuck, you go ahead and take us out and close us out. We're going to part. We're gonna bag this thing into the hole, and we're going to pop the air brake.
Okay. If anybody needs me to get set up with traffics or they're having some issues with their own business or whatever, give me a call, 1-800-388-4352. My extension is 203. Or you can just email me. It's very easy, chuck@traffics.com. Or just send me a private message on Instagram, Chuck Snow CEO. Take it away, Rico.
Sounds great. Well, we want to thank you guys, ladies and gentlemen, for taking time out of your schedule to come and hang out with us, whether you download it or you listen to us live. We definitely appreciate it. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took a few minutes to hang out with us, and we're eternally grateful for that. So we're still working on getting up the video portion of the show. Think we may have a breakthrough. Got some stuff that we're working on. May have a breakthrough. So we may be having that coming sooner than later. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we want you guys to be safe out there. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. If it's too slick out there, just go ahead and pull over. God bless you. Good night, and God willing, we'll talk to you next week.
Catch you on
night, guys.
Good night, guys.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.